Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I am super happy to welcome you a new interview. I have on the other side of the Zoom connection the one and only Sean Ash. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. How about you? It's great to see you and talk to you again.
Yes, it's been a while. So it is at the moment 10 a.m. for you, 7 p.m. for me in Paris time. That's correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Still a little early here from California standards, but yeah. It's 10 a.m. and nice and sunny here. So the pandemic, what it really did for me was it caused me to completely recalibrate all of my plans. And I don't just mean that short term, I mean long term. And that can seem hyperbolic, but I'm sure a lot of people feel this way. So I had all these plans of, I'm going to do this album, I'm going to do these videos, I'm going to release it, I'm going to tour, and I'm going to get into the traditional cycle of write, record, and tour. And the day that the travel ban came in from Europe, I knew that my entire next 5 years of my life was going to have to change.
Okay.
And the reason was that my musicians I work with, my drummer is in Europe. So he was flying over for the videos and there was all this different stuff going on. It just all got canceled, shut down. So it kind of popped my balloon, so to speak, of everything I was doing. And, you know, I think it was for me somewhat healthy because I had to slow down. And I don't know, I think it was maybe youthful hubris of just kind of going and being way too headstrong about everything. But I think that it caused me to slow down a lot and think more about the day-to-day things, enjoying the process.
No problem.
So anyways, with the COVID thing, you know, it's been evolving, especially here in the States. Things have been, you know, starting and stopping. So where I live in California, you know, they had told us for a while, oh, things are going to start opening. And this is so last year, things are going to start opening in July. Mm-hmm. So I play with a cover band around here. We are getting ready to go and do all that stuff. And then, oh, now we're not playing again.
Okay.
So gigs got canceled. A couple months later, things are opening up again. Gigs got canceled. So it's been a lot of starts and stops. And it's really given me a lot of an education on just taking things as they come, going through the process, and allowing it to be easy, even if there's obstacles that come in the way. It really helped me, I think, grow up a little bit in terms of my mindset of career and being realistic about goals, money, you know, like income, you know, like making sure it's all just right. Mm-hmm. And COVID kind of did that for me. I'm really fortunate in the way that my living situation was unaffected. You know, I work from home, so I've been teaching since 2012 online. So the biggest jump was moving from Skype to Zoom in some respects for my work, you know, like it was migrating from there. And that's for that element of it. But for my solo music, from that career aspect, or from the career aspect of my solo music, rather, it's completely changed. It's 180 degrees different from where I was at. Mm-hmm. At least that's how I feel. Maybe it's the same direction, but musically the same thing, but my approach.
But you, prior to the pandemic, you already had a part of your activities online, so it was not a huge jump for you, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't a huge jump, but I had been gearing up for a couple of years to leave the online thing because I'm just very uninterested in social media completely and forever. I'm uninterested, and I'm not as productive. I'm better to work just make music and that's it. So I was really excited to get into the real world. Like, you know, I'm going to be in this city and playing for these people and meeting people. I just really love that. And I was looking forward to it. So now I've had to, you know, again, slow it down a little bit. And for the online thing, you know, I'm teaching still. I've tried to do content, but I can't make content. I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. So it's impossible for me. And, or because the attitude I have, but it just doesn't, it's like pulling teeth. It's just really hard. So, it's given me a lot of respect for people who do DIY because I've realized how much I'm lacking in that still, you know, even though I've been doing this for my whole life. It's where I live, you know, it's pretty rural. So, people have been pretty calm about everything, fortunately. So I've not had the thing of, you know, people locking themselves just in their homes all day, but at the same time, you know, it has been a lot of an adjustment. So mm-hmm. Now that things are opening up again here, which, you know, so that's to mention now here in California, shows are beginning again. I've been gigging a little bit with my cover band, cool. Audio Mutts. We play rock cover music and it's a blast. Van Halen, Scorpions, Journey. It's what else would you want to play as a guitar player except the stuff you played in Guitar Hero as a kid? So I'm having a blast and so fortunate that that's happening, but you know, one thing I want to mention about that is, like, you know, before I was all about just doing my music. So my only really concern and care in life was I want to do my music and follow my path. And now I just am really grateful to play in a cover band for people who are having a good time. And that is so humbling and gives me, I don't know, I just think it's a healthier place to be in for me. Mm-hmm. So the pandemic, I feel so bad for, you know, everyone who's been so affected. And we all have been. But I think that really, really successful people, what I've noticed is that they're always optimistic. And I've tried to just copy that. So I'm not an optimist all the time. But I've tried to look at every single thing that's happened in the last year and go, well, what can I do with this to do something with this? Because just sitting around complaining online has caused half the problems in the world right now. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think being productive and all that has become more of a focus because this whole COVID thing.
Yeah. You said that you are really not into social networks and such, but a couple of weeks ago, we stumbled upon each other on Clubhouse through this audio social app. So no more Clubhouse either?
For no. You?
No? You're done with Clubhouse?
I quit that about the week after, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, by the way, I'm happy to be bluntly honest about why, if you're curious.
Sure,
so,
go ahead.
Clubhouse, I went on there not for guitar. I went on there for cryptocurrency because I'm really into that right mm-hmm. now, like studying it in the whole entire, not just crypto, but like where it's going to go, music and blockchain.
Yeah, with the NFT and so on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like everyone says, I'm in it for the technology as I'm just watching my portfolio. But so I got on there for that. And then I was like, oh, this is great for guitar. But the thing is that I love creativity and art and music, but I'm not really into guitar as much anymore. Ironically, I'm a guitar channel and all, but like I have a really hard time being interested genuinely about like what kind of picks I use for more than 5 minutes, you know? Okay. And Clubhouse was hours of that.
Okay.
So I just was like, man, I can't do this. And that, here's the other part of it. And this is where I don't mean to be provocative when I say this, but here we go. I find it really interesting how many audio professionals have all day to burn on an app that's audio. So I just don't understand how there's all these session guitar players on there when they should be working. Like, mm-hmm. That's just like, I didn't have time. I was like, I can't do it tonight. I'm busy today. I was just busy, you know, like rearranging my house. I'm like, I can't be on Clubhouse. So I was like, how do these people have time? So I just realized it's a great place. It's a great thing. But for me, it's just like going into a place where I don't belong.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. it just, that's how I felt. And that's how I feel about most social media. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping and praying it'd be like the one for me. And I was like, nope, same problem I have. So,
yeah, and it's true that I totally see what you mean because, of course, at the beginning of Clubhouse, there was this huge hype that you had to be on there and it was the next best thing because you were able mm-hmm. to talk with each other. And because of the pandemic, we were really looking for this kind of social interaction. And nowadays, the hype has died down almost completely. And still, I am on the app quite often, but I don't participate a lot, but I stumble onto some interesting rooms once in a while where I can talk and everything. But it's a choice. And if you don't pay attention, you can spend your whole day on that and nothing is accomplished otherwise. So I totally see what you mean.
Yeah. And that's been something that I've had to learn throughout my life. You know, when I grew up, when I was a kid, I was really unathletic. I was really overweight. I'll put it like that. I was really overweight and I had no physical fitness in any kind of way. And all I did was play video games and, you know, go on the internet. And then when I started playing guitar, I started trimming the fat actually both ways. So I started getting thinner, taking care of myself. And I started getting rid of things in my life that were taking up time. So like now I just can't play video games. Like I play and I feel repulsed by them. Because it's like my life force energy going out to something that is not building something. And that's I'm an extremist in that way. Like that's really important to me. So I have a hard time doing a lot of stuff like that. I don't like watching movies a lot. I don't like sitting down for 2 hours at a time, not because I can't sit still, but because I'm thinking, man, I could have used that time for something else. Not saying I work all the time either, but it's just, I have to be very picky with where I place my bandwidth. So with social media, I really struggle with that because I grew up with it. You know, I grew up on YouTube. That's how anyone knows who I am is because I started posting stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
So because I was in that world and then I started, you know, just growing into a different way, like going in a different, not maturing from that, because that's a great path to go. I just went a different direction. I've been feeling like this pull to go back to it, kind of like that one phrase, you know, like dance with the girl that you showed up to the dance with. You know, it's like that idea, like, you know, keep on doing the thing. But every time I try, I'm just, or I have a distraction, I'm just faced with this feeling that I'm doing something wrong, like morally wrong or ethically wrong. And it's, I know this sounds extreme, but that's just how I am. You know, I just really care about what I'm doing, and that can change also at a given time. Mm-hmm. So if social media like Clubhouse, you know, I have to be in it, or I have to just put it to the side. You know, moderation's hard for me.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like same with food, by the way. If there's bad food around, I know how nutrition works now. I mean, I'm going to eat it. Like if you put a candy bar in my fridge, it's going to be gone. So I just don't buy that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I do it. So
the very first time we did an interview was in 2018, I think, at the Winter NAM. And so since then, we lost Eddie Van Halen a couple of months ago. So you just mentioned that you are playing in a tribute band, or a band where you do covers with Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
So what was the impact of Eddie Van Halen on your guitar playing, would you say? And on your life as a musician, yeah. Not only on guitar.
I'm just going to say this, that everyone, this is probably going to be the most unconventional interview for some viewers. So my dad's a guitar player, and he's an amazing guitar player. Okay. So he's amazing. He's the only guitar hero I really needed growing up. I didn't need to listen to really anyone else, because he had that, like, he was a shredder back in the day. So he grew up alongside Eddie, not alongside him, but, you know, like grew up where it's like everyone's listening to Van Halen.
Mm.
So it's kind of like now there's other guitar players who are really famous right now compared to me. So I'm not doing what they're doing because I want to do what I'm doing. So as a result of this, down the road, when I grew up, I didn't have any Van Halen in the house. And my dad was like, whatever. Cause it was around. It was just like, it's like you hear on the radio all the time. You know, it's like, I'm used to it. So Eddie Van Halen didn't really have any impact on me until he passed away.
Okay.
Which was very similar to my Holdsworth story as well. I don't know what it is about someone's book being closed, but it's kind of like the idea that you get the full picture of the entire story of someone's life. And I've learned I want to start, you know, having more gratitude and taking in things, even if I'm not a huge fan of it, while people are around. Because there's that one, it's an old African proverb, is like, for everyone who passes away, it's a library that's burnt to the ground. And I really take that seriously now, because I have a lot of friends who are, you know, as old as my parents or older. And I really value time and experience and just the whole thing, the whole life story. So with Van Halen, you know, his passing away came as a shock to, I think, everyone, just because he was very private. And the impact it made was that I knew that it's kind of a duty of all of us, even if we're not a fan or if we didn't like it, which I do like, I do love his playing and all that stuff. I'm a fan now. But like, it's our duty to keep it going, and not just keep it going within ourselves, but to tell people about, to tell the story, to let that breathe through and let it live through your music. So this new song I have coming out, which we'll talk about, but there's a solo in it where purposely I was like, I need to channel, you know, Eddie. Like I need him to be next to me in the room, along with like Alex Lifeson, Rory Gallagher, and Alan Holt, like all my heroes. I want to feel like my heroes are with me and they're cheering me on. And I feel like I did it for me. Like what I wanted to get, I got out of it. So it's made a huge impact, because it is life-changing in the way that it makes you reevaluate where your life is at and what people are going to see when your book is closed. So that was a big impact. And another impact, and I know this is maybe a little bit of a tangential thing, but through teaching, you know, people have asked me about his technique, and I've watched Eddie a lot now, and a lot. I've watched a lot of his videos. And the man was a technical genius, but people, you know, they know that, but you compare guys like Eddie Van Halen to guys like Alan Holdsworth, there's a lot more in common than we think. So the impact Eddie has made on me has been realizing when you go all the way, you push it to the limit, what that looks like, you know, what it can be, you know, some of the things you have to care about. Like, you can have perfect technique, but you still got to have fun on stage and run around. So that's another thing. After Eddie passed away, I was like, I need to jump around on stage. I need to dance. I need to move around, because no offense to anyone, but I'm just getting really tired of guitar players staring at their guitar necks and standing still. I can't do it anymore. It's fine. It's cool. Or sitting down. That's another thing for videos. It's like, people who are just sitting down and playing all the time, it's great. But you got to get the body moving. So Eddie helped kind of show that. But on this note, I want to show you something. This is really cool. This isn't mine, but this is a friend's.
Woohoo! Nice.
And this is the Frankie. This is the Fender Custom Shop one.
Oh, so
this is the exact replica.
The 25K.
Not anymore. It's about twice as that. But it's okay. My friend bought this, and he's a buddy that I live on his property, and you know he got this as a collector. I just want to show this because I thought Eddie would come up, and I just think this is so special because I keep this around, like I keep it out. It's probably not safe, but yeah, don't. People are gonna get mad that I probably put it on a guitar stand, not a glass case. But I look at this, and you know, there's something to looking at this and going, man, this means something. You know, this has meaning to it, and I love the story of it that he just wanted. He had a vision and he went for it.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, if there's a guitar, or anything that I'm like, I want to change it. I think about this a little bit more, you know, because I'm like, this is just cool. Mm-hmm. So I've been putting stickers on my guitars now just because I feel like it. You know, even my Andersons. Sorry, Tom, but the stickers on. Yeah, there's got stickers. Oh, no, that one. Wrong guitar. So, here we go. I got stickers on my Andersons.
Oh, now. Okay, so cool.
I like the idea of just having fun. Mm. And Eddie helped me realize it a bit more, you know, and I think everyone does, and that's all of our duties, but I know it's a long answer, but his passing, I don't think it's fully set in for me yet because I still haven't really gone through his whole catalog and really listened. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm still learning about Alan Holdsworth and his life and everything he did. Sean Lane's a great example of this too, one of my heroes. And I love just learning about him and studying, kind of like, you know, studying Bach or Beethoven, the greats for a reason. And I'm really, for me, I take that really seriously. You know, mastery, the masters, I mean, I didn't go to school per se, but I treat it as a very academic thing of like, there's this institutional thing. I mean, Eddie is a whole college of his own or a university.
Yes, definitely. It's amazing. And so, when you're on stage, are you going to do the Eddie jump with the guitar? You know,
I've been trying. Yeah. I've been doing Eruption. I've been trying. I've been doing Eruption. We play a couple. We don't play a lot of their songs. I mean, we probably play like six or seven. We're a tribute to the spirit of rock and roll, which is just a way to brand a cover band and make a little bit more money to anyone out there. So yeah, we play a bunch of Van Halen stuff. We play ZZ Top, just, you know, rock music. And I love it. But for me, you know, I'm 27 years old. So a lot of my heroes are dead. And if they're not, they're going to be. And there's a big lesson in that for an individual on their own path, because that's going to be me one day. And I have to make sure that my book was written how I wanted it to be written. You know, I'd rather have my book burned up and people forget about it than not write it at all, so to speak. You know, so I want to really live my life out just like how these guys did. Maybe not, you know, to the extremes or to a point where I'm endangering my well-being or anything like that, but the true artistic vision of not compromising and just allowing yourself to be you. So that's a long answer how Eddie Van Halen has started to impact my life. I'm looking forward to much more of it too.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the very first guitar riff you were able to play? And can you play it? Just an extract.
The first guitar riff I ever played, I think, was probably Iron Man, because it was just, you know, it's a power chord riff. And I've never really learned the real song, but I think I can remember it's power chord. Do you remember Iron Man? Like, well, do you know how to play it?
Okay. No.
So I'm going to mess this up, but. Sloppiest Iron Man possible. So that's, I think, the first riff I learned, but the first song I ever learned in totality was Crazy Train by Ozzy.
Okay.
And including the tapping part too. I was a pretty, I had a lot of work ethic when I first started guitar. And yeah, that's a song I play in the cover band too, which is,
wow,
really fun.
Very cool.
Yeah, Crazy Train. So Crazy Train, I feel like, is like in my DNA. That's, I consider that my first song I learned. But I'm sure that there was another one or there was something easier, because that song's pretty hard. But that's what I remember as being the first song I worked on.
And so let's talk about Ozzy Osbourne for a second. So what is, sure, your favorite guitar player among all the great guitar greats who played with Ozzy?
My favorite?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so hard. I think Zakk Wylde, but not because of his playing, because of who he is and what he represents. I like Zakk. I just like him. I think he's a cool dude. Randy Rhoads is an amazing guitar player. I just never was really super into his playing, like in terms of, like, I learned a bunch of Aussie stuff, but I never thought like, oh, Randy Rhoads, you know what I mean? Like, I learned Aussie music, but I didn't think about Randy as much. I don't mean any disrespect. He's a great guitar player. Who else played with him? Jakey Lee.
Yeah,
I guess Zach Wilde. I'll say Zach Wilde. No offense to the other guys. They're okay. But Zach Wilde, I just love his attitude.
All right, let's move to the single Ocean, which is released or is going to be released sometime in May, right?
Yeah, so Ocean is a new single. I'm putting out my first single in 5 years. First music that I'm releasing.
We are going to talk about that. One album in 5 years. Come on.
And hey, be careful, be six next time. Just kidding. So Ocean comes out on May 14th, and which is just... let me do the math on that. 9 days away or so. Mm-hmm. So this is very soon. And I cannot wait. I wish I could just play it. Hey, listen to this right now, because I'm just so eager to share it with every person. But May 14th is the day.
And so was it a pandemic composition? How do you usually compose?
So believe it or not, this song, I played it at the NAMM that you and I interviewed at. This has been done for about three years now. I didn't write a whole lot during the pandemic. I can talk more on that. I didn't play a lot of guitar in the pandemic either, but it's not because of the pandemic. I had an injury, but I'd like to expand on that actually, because I think it could be useful for other guitar players. This song was written, it started being written in 2017, the first beginnings of it. And then I finished up most of it in 2018. And then I had this thing in my mind that I was going to start learning drums and playing drums in my music. So I wrote and recorded the drums of this song. I wrote and recorded the entire thing. It was ready to roll. And it just didn't feel right. Like, it just didn't, something was off. And I'm really feeling kind of, I don't claim to know what I'm doing, but I just go by what I feel, right? So I was like, it just doesn't feel right now to put out any music. But I did perform it at that one NAMM that we met, the Anderson booth. And shortly after that, I was finishing up more songs. And then I started working with the drummer that I've been working with for, even before Flux. And we started recording, and the drum tracks for that were laid down in 2019. And I re-recorded the song about five times after that. And I'd love to explain it. There's very good reasons why. I think perfectionism is a bad thing, but I've learned that when you get your vision, well, if it took that long, it takes that long. Mm-hmm. So it's exactly what I thought when I first started writing the song in 2017. It's exactly what I wanted it to be. So it took this much time to do it. But it was done in pieces. And I think that was very new for me. My last album I did, Flux, was recorded all the drums, all the guitars, all the bass, all the leads, it's like, or all the acoustics right now. And I've been learning how to piece things apart a little bit for productivity reasons, for boredom reasons. I've been living with these songs again for about 3 or 4 years now. So I've been really careful that I don't just, get tunnel vision and then start disliking the song. So it was finished. I was finished writing, but I finished the solo. The final solo was completed, probably about a week before I emailed you. So in a month and a half ago.
Okay.
And
do you remember what was the, initial idea behind the song? Was it a chord progression, a riff, a melody? Was it?
So there's this major, well, I guess just major, major chord add six right here. This is a B. Now I was just playing with a loop pedal. This is back in 2017. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I was like, that's a cool sound. I was like, that kind of has a nice flow to it. And I looped that. I had my Fractal AX8 with the looper on it, and I was just playing over it. And I remember I took a video from my phone of the idea. And then, so it's like, why would I just not record? I took a video of the loop pedals, like, this looped idea. And then I did forget about it, but I put it off to the side. And then I started developing it, and I couldn't go any further than that. And it took me about a year until I could break through after that initial idea. It could start with the intro, which is somewhat strange for me. I don't really start with intros all the time. I normally start with a theme or a specific melody. But in the case of this song, that thematic element of that riff lives inside most of the song. Mm-hmm. So even though this is more of an expanded chord here, the rhythm guitar this time. And I knew right away when I wrote it that it was going to be something that was water themed. I don't know if that's, I have that in a lot of my music. I don't know what that's about. I need to talk to a therapist or something, but but like it just felt like water. So I asked my girlfriend at the time, I said, what do you think I should call it? She's like, how about ocean? Like, cool, done. And I always stick with my demo titles too. I should say always, but most often I stick with the demo and I just build it all around what the title is. So I don't really name songs, you know, Untitled Number 6. I name it, you know, a random thing or like Hot Air Balloon. And it's like, oh, what does that sound like? No, and no, I have not written that one yet. But yeah, ocean. So I never want to change it after that.
And so what was the process after that to develop the song? And what was the process after that, after the song was finished to record it? You just told us that it took many years. That at one point you have a green light in your head and saying, okay, Sean, it's done. Now you need to master it and publish it.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think, I think this will be beneficial for your listeners in the way that I am a lot less experienced in this world of creating and publishing music than a lot of your interviewees, at least so far as I've seen. And why I think this could be beneficial for people is that I've always struggled with perfectionism, right? So I think that that's a factor. But there's a time where, you know, you have a song that you'll be working on, and then there's also the other stuff that orbits that, like an album or a collection of songs. So while I've had this song, I'll talk about how I wrote it a little bit after this, but I had this song, but I knew it was a part of something else. Like I knew it was going to be a part of the second album because that was what I was working on. So a lot of ideas for the second album. So I didn't want to record it and publish it and then not have anything for a couple months. I did that before when I first put out my first single. I had one song I wrote, put it out, and people said, where's the next one? And I don't
And there here's is somewhere. No next
let me,
one.
let me dig for it. And then, you know, making from my EP comes out later this year. I had not written that, you know, things like that. I've been through that already, you know, in like 2012, 2013. And I've been watching myself to not get into that this time. So I wanted to be really prepared and make sure that I'm doing this responsibly. But I just didn't really understand the scope of what I was doing in terms of how big this was, like how much I wanted the second album be for me. Not necessarily what it's going to do for the world. Like I want to, course, be helpful and healing to people, and I want everyone to hear it. But you know, this is, I'm an artist, so it's like I want it to be what I want it to be. It's for me in a way. It's like I've been directing that vision, and it's been changing. The album titles changed once in this process. The songs, I mean, I have written probably 20 songs that are not on here. It was going to have vocals on it, and now it's not. So there's, yeah, so I've been writing. I stopped writing instrumental music for a while and went to all vocal music, and just because I was getting bored, and then I went back. So it's not linear for me in any way, because that's just not how I create. I just see creativity as something that's there, and I'm tapping into it in some way. The challenge is being responsible with directing and getting things done, but I think some things can't be done like that. I don't believe that anymore. I had a lot of friends tell me, just put it out, or just, you know, do an EP and do all this stuff. They were wrong. I this has turned out exactly as I thought it would. And it's great. I'm just so happy. I hope people appreciate it as much as I do. So about writing the song, I start a lot, you know, either with something that's simple that I can build upon that is maybe solo guitar, including for Flux. I like to take a lot of those ideas and put them in solo guitar. So for this song, I really just wanted to be able to play a whole part of the song, like all the rhythm guitar. So rather than writing and recording, and this, because this would be faster, recording it into Logic and then building it up, I didn't do that. With even a lot of this music on the entire album, a lot of it has been written as solo guitar or from the perception of I'm going to write this as I'm playing this role. So that's where it would start. Then after I felt I have enough of a bed to play on, I would put it into Logic, figure out the tempo, maybe figure out some rhythms. In this song, what was very different was that I actually went off of the bass guitar. So I started with this, right? But then I just kept that looping in my DAW. And then I got a bass out. And I forget who I was listening to at the time. I think I was listening to, I remember Death Cab for Cutie. Completely unrelated band to what I do, but they're I really love music. And they have a lot of songs that start with bass, and the bass is a fundamental role in their compositions. And I thought, I don't have anything that's like that in my music. I've, you know, very much taken the role of just, hey, look at the guitar, the bass is going to play. It's in the background, man. It's big guitar. And I've had a lot of bass players complain. And like, I like your album, but you need a bass player. I'm like, you're right. So I was like, I want this to be different. So I came up with that bass line. Play with the fingers, and I loved that. There was something about that where I was like, that's the song. And when I say that's the song, I have this idea about songs, okay, where let's say you listen to the Beatles. I don't know about you, I'm a big Beatles fan. So if you listen to the Beatles and you listen in isolation to the drums, you know what song it is. Because it's the song. It contains the story is inside of that one piece of the music, or it's inside, you know, George Harrison's guitar part, or it's contained within every part in total. But then when you put it all together, it's its own thing also. So I view songwriting very much like this. So with the bass, I wanted the bass to continue that momentum. So I knew that there was a feeling I needed to capture with everything else wrapped around that bass. Even though everything is its own piece, it was all wrapped around that bass. I don't really remember how I wrote the rest, to be frank. The chorus, I can't really remember a whole lot about writing it. You know, I'm sure, you know, people listening know how it is. You just kind of sometimes have things that just appear and you're like, oh, I wrote that a while ago. But what I did think about while writing is that it's the first song I'm publishing that has riffs in it. And when I say riffs, like the riff for the song is. Okay, so let's say I go to my last album, Flux, so there's a song of mine called Memory Lane. So the rhythm guitar is. Now that's a riff. But I view it as more of like chord style, guitar playing, harmonies. I haven't really had a whole lot of like single note riffs in my music. So I really wanted to try to get some of that on this new album. And I'm getting better at writing riffs. It is a very hard thing to write riffs, I have to say. I respect everyone who writes all these riffs and just have riff machines. It is incredible. I'm much better with melody and harmony, but riffs are, it's fun. So this song, it helped me stretch out my legs a bit, get into riffs. The bridge of the song has this big open, very Holdsworthian, as I call it, clean, with, you know, modulation, multi-delays. And that was not necessarily written when I wrote the song, but there's a chord that has been coming up in several of the compositions. I just love it. I just call it like, you know, E big Lydian, because it's a big E Lydian chord. So this is like a character in my new album that appears a couple times. And in this song, Ocean, it appears at the very end of the song when the song hits, and then also in the middle section. So there's tonalities that are storytelling that are not just related to this song, but they tie ribbons into the other songs as well. So that's why it's also taken so long, is I wanted to make sure that this is not just a chapter. It's a chapter that speaks to the book that I've been writing about this idea, whatever that, you know, whatever people think of it in that container.
There is this nice, very short moment at, I think, around the 1 minute mark on the song where it sounds like a violin, but it's definitely a guitar, you know, some trill guitar.
Oh, yeah. It's like a harmonized kind of vibe thing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So
I love that. Very nice. The whole song is very cinematographic because there is this huge landscape of music and everything. But I mean, each time I listen to this your single, when I arrive at around the 1 minute part, oh, that's like butterfly, you know. Oh, on the left, here you go. Look at that. Very cool. Very cool idea.
Oh, thank you. And real quick, I'm just gonna make sure my other camera's still going, just to be sure. Just to be super sure, and I'm just gonna, here we go, real quick. Okay, so we're good. I don't want to end the interview. Go, I don't have any video for you. That would be the worst thing.
I have the Zoom recording. No big deal. Oh, okay.
So I really overthought a lot of this album. Okay, and I'm gonna answer that, but in a long way. And by the way, if any of this is too long, just chop it up, and you know.
An interview is never too long. Yeah, go ahead, please.
This is my second album, and there's something about a second album that I've noticed a trend in music, which is it's like the second album, it's very different than the first. It has to be a step up, but it has to be it's its own thing, okay? Same as the debut album. I think after that, maybe third album, I'll probably say the same thing. But like, for example, and specifically this, Steve Vai released Flexible, and then he waited a bunch of years and released Passion and Warfare. Okay. And that was that, when we think Steve Vai, at least I think Steve Vai, I think that Passion and Warfare, Steve Vai first. So I've been really studying Steve Vai. Like I like listening to his music and thinking about his mindset, you know, watching interviews, thinking about where he would be in that time. And I've thought, man, I got to really start taking more influences sonically, because I've not actually learned a lot of Steve's stuff. I mean, it's hard to play, so I'd rather just, you
know, really?
I'd rather just work on my own stuff, because it's so hard to work on his stuff. You know, it's so idiosyncratic to buy. But he's become a huge life inspiration to me, career inspiration. So I thought about his Passion Warfare, and I noticed how many layers were on that, mm-hmm. and how little that I've done, and how little I've explored with effects, how little I've allowed myself to just be, you know, kind of like, whatever, I'm going to do this over here. So that part of the song was completely blank up until like 3 months ago. Now, even though I wrote this, you know, years ago, basically, I just knew there's something's going to go there. I don't know what yet. So I couldn't figure it out. I was writing all these shreddy licks. I had all these different variations. I thought, what do I got to do? I got to do the Passion and Warfare thing. I got to do like a 7-part harmony in one spot, and that's it. So that's why I did that, and it was purely thanks to Steve, because I thought, what would Steve do? And my engineer or mixing mastering engineer Jeremy Kroll, a very talented guy, and I said, hey, you know, he's a big Vi fan. I said, hey, I'm going for the Vi thing here, like make it work, like just make it sound like that. And he's like, cool. So it's it all is actual layers. It's not a harmonizer, just because I don't know how to program them. I've never used effects like that, but oddly, even though I have like an Axe FX and all these different plugins, I've never really been in the, you know, harmonies or like the Brian May thing. I've never tried doing that. And I know Brian May, of course, recorded that, but I never tried even approaching it. So that's why I want to try something fresh and new. And I'm glad. Thank you so much for saying that, because that is, when I listen to that song, you know, I try to listen to it as just a listener now. I go, man, I'm really glad I did that.
Yeah,
that's just fun. It's fun. It's just fun. It seems like something like a kid would be like, "What's that?" And I love that.
Yeah, exactly. So Ocean is going to be released on May 15th, and do you have a specific date for the rest of the album, or it will be ready when it will be ready?
So one of the things I alluded to of, you know, COVID, this pandemic thing, the world changing events, changing my direction, is that, you know, I wanted to do the right record tour thing. And if we put things in a standpoint of like, you know, say with everything being canceled, right? Touring is a very volatile thing right now. Playing live shows is volatile. So what I mean by this is that I could have a tour booked, and now the precedent is set that the government could shut it down. Okay, so there's a possibility that anything I plan might not go through. Fine, that's a risk, and it's always been a risk for everyone, and I understand that. However, I don't want to be that stressed out. Like, I think we've all been stressed out over the last year. So I'm really uninterested in doing anything that's volatile. I want to do things that are very certain and things that I just feel really good about. So I am not really thinking anymore about the traditional artist career in any way. I want, like what I mean by releasing albums, doing a tour, doing this over here, getting a sponsorship of so-and-so over here, because it's too volatile. The value changes too much right now. I'm waiting for things to calm down a bit. So what I've changed in my process is that I'm not looking at this as the album release anymore is the big deal. The album is the compilation of what is going to be a lot of songs I'm going to be releasing over the next, probably over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. The reason for this too is I'm still recording the album. I've been re-recording parts as well, re-recording. And part of this is that last year when it happened, and I'm kind of going different. Sorry if I'm going different directions on this, but what happened last year is the very beginning of the year, almost exactly New Year's Day, a couple days before, but New Year's Day, I woke up and my entire right arm was numb. And what had happened is I fell asleep like this in my arm. Okay. And I just didn't sleep. It was just not a good decision. That compounded with, I had been doing a lot of weightlifting at the time. So I had been doing a lot of bench press with improper form, now that I know. And then I had also been doing a lot of editing on my computer, and my desk is at a wrong height compared to my chair. So my arm was constantly going up. So essentially what happened is that in my elbow, all the nerves, I mean, I didn't see a doctor, but this is, I just know this is what happened. Something got messed up in my elbow. And I started losing feeling in my hands or my right hand. And this is it. This is the beginning of 2020. Before 2020 hit, I started my 2020 because what was happening is that, and I'm being honest, and I really mean this. I actually thought that because of how it was going, that this would be my final album because I thought that this would become irreparable. So, because I had never experienced anything like this before. So I would be playing and suddenly I lose all the grip strength in my hand, all of it.
Wow.
And I mean, I started to hold my pick like this. So like Eddie, by the way, that gave me a lot of appreciation for him because I knew maybe he had some afternoon too. But even now to this day, I'll play like this sometimes with holding the pick like this because I had to play like that for most of 2020 when I could play. So I was trying to record this album, hoping it would get released. I had music videos planned for March of 2020, and this is happening in January. So I'm recording this stuff and I'm, you know, so stressed out. And I could hear it, you know, now that after the time elapsed and I gave it time to listen to it, I went, man, I could do this a lot better if I felt better about it. And essentially, because of the weight of everything going on in the world and then COVID canceling all my plans, I took a break from my music for a good 6 months. I didn't open, compose, write anything on my album for a good 6 months. And anytime I would sit down to work, I'd get anxiety. Anytime I would even go into my studio, I would not feel good. Because I just felt like I had limitations, like I wasn't taking care of, you know, my body in some way. It just didn't feel right. So I took time off, and that was really good to do because I'm healed now. I'm back 100%. Well,
good.
96%.
Good to hear.
96%, the other 4% I make up for with attitude.
Okay.
But it's because I can still, you know, I can still feel it. Sometimes it gets a little strange. What it basically is, if anyone ever experiences this, I'm pretty sure it's called a pinched ulnar nerve. And it's also called cubital tunnel syndrome, not carpal, but cubital. And essentially my pinky, my ring finger would go numb. Like this part of my hand would start going numb with carpal tunnels, normally these three fingers, but it was this side, but then my entire hand would lose strength. So I did a lot of self-rehabilitation. I didn't see a doctor, which is a bad decision, but at the same time, all of the hospitals were closed. Like you couldn't get in. So I was in this like quagmire of like, okay, I can't record my album. I can't like get help for this. I don't even want help because I'm just depressed from the world right now. Like, you know, it's like all this stuff. So 2020 was a very inactive year for my music and I felt good about it. I actually liked it, you know, in terms of like, it was a good thing, but towards August, maybe July, August, I started coming out of that. My hands started healing. And then I decided I had to re-record everything. Because not only could I play better now, like because my hands felt good, but my vision was more, you know, it was a broader vision and I could hear deeper. You know, of course, I still did music stuff. I'm probably painting it too extreme. I'm still very involved musically. But by the time I got back to focusing on my music, I went, you know, this doesn't feel like me anymore. This feels like me a year ago. So let me just redo it. And there was some music I did right during the pandemic, some stuff that is still even in development now for this album, like a few tracks I just need to finish one part for, like composing wise. But that's why it's been a little weird, you know, because drums were for five songs were done in 2019, but I've only been able to start re-recording them in the last couple months. So it's not what I wanted it to be. But with that being said, I'm really glad I didn't release any music last year because it just didn't feel right to me to do. I didn't want to participate in the world last year. You know, I wanted to live on my own island and just have a barbecue and a dog. You know, that's my only thing I cared about last year was having happiness and peace. So that's, I'm just being very honest too. I don't know if this is too vulnerable, but it's not, you know, or whatever, or oversharing, but that's really what happened. And I would tell anyone, if you ever have an injury, there's a few things. Most people will not tell you that they had an injury because it will threaten their job security. So even me saying this now, theoretically, someone might want to hire me for a gig. And because this is a possibility of volatility, right? They might go, oh, well, you might get injured. So people have not talked about injuries for decades. And that's what I think. I think that people have kept quiet about their limitations, about their physical ailments, and how that changes their guitar playing. I think there's a danger to that because there's a lack of education of what do you do when that happens? Which is, do you force through it? Which I don't think is a good thing. And what if you're permanently damaged? How do you live with that? Which is, people have had to. So I really need people to understand that if anything ever happens to you that gets in the way of your joy, you're still there. And there's a way around it for sure. Mm-hmm. Because I used to really value my alternate picking and that's all I cared about. Now I think, why didn't I start a comedy picking sooner? So it's good things come out of things sometimes, not always, of course, you know, but look at a guy like Jason Becker, man.
Yeah.
If I could, and this is the other thing too. If I were to complain about this for a second, because I'm not complaining, I'm just talking about it. And I didn't do anything about it. What about Jason Becker?
Mm-hmm.
It's just all, he's just a musical soul and there's no stopping that. So everyone should know that there's no stopping it. There's no stopping what you have to express. So limitations, forget about them. Just be you, even if that's you with an injury, you with a bad leg, you with now your pinky doesn't work, or, oh, you can only play guitar a couple hours a day because of carpal tunnel, whatever. Do it. Be you. Mm-hmm. And that's, it really helped me, man, because I used to get really worried about that kind of stuff. Like, oh, what if something happens to my hands, I'll be able to play the same. And now I think, no, I'll play differently.
Yeah,
I'll sure. play better. Mm-hmm. So.
And so do you think that originally your injury was guitar related, or it was a mix of your computer position, your guitar playing and everything? So it was different things.
I don't think it was my guitar playing at all.
Okay.
I think I have good technique. I'd love, if anyone has a criticism, please tell me and you can teach me because I'd love to get better. But I have pretty good technique and good posture when I play, at least. But what it is that I have anyone out there, I'm sorry to this company, but there's a desk company that I'm going to trash right now. Okay. So the output platform, everyone's using it. It's this wooden desk. It's a great desk, but here's the problem with it. Most office chairs, when they raise to their highest and the armrest, it's too high for the armrest. So what happens is this, it's consistent on all of them. I measure. So it's too high of a desk. So what happened is that I would be doing all this editing with my elbow like this, so compressed down here, and then moving side to side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was one of the biggest factors. The other, and this is probably what caused it being an injury, and I think this caused more of the injury aspect rather than just the something I had to change, but weightlifting, which is I was doing a lot of bench press because I wanted to look like John Petrucci. And and I was going too far back. If of course anyone's watching this, you have to be really careful with how far back you go on bench press. And I was using a machine, which typically machines are safer, except I didn't know that you still had to set the machine exactly this way. I'm still learning. I didn't grow up with fitness in mind. So I've had to learn this stuff the hard way. So I injured myself, I think, through that. But what has changed my life completely is a rollerball mouse. So you know the rollerballs?
Yeah.
Like the these things.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I switched to one of these, I started healing. Like, mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it was the editing.
So you don't need to move your arm anymore. You're just moving your finger, basically.
It's just fingers. And okay. I mean, really, it was in a week I noticed a difference. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, I should have done this sooner. But I consulted a bunch of different studio engineers who I know they're just on a computer all day. And they said, I've had the same problem. Go with the mouse. But again, no one talks about this stuff. Or maybe they do and I don't catch it. But I think, I hope anyone listening to this, please take this. Talk about this stuff more. Talk about injuries more. Because there's going to be someone out there who doesn't have any clue in the world. And that might really help them out to know. Like, if you ever experience it, tell someone. Be helpful. Because I had to do some digging. And again, if I would have went to a doctor, would have been fixed. But they were all closed. So whatever.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Everything's good now. Mm. The moral of the story is that treat your body right and good things will happen. But it's not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Until it is.
Excellent philosophy. Let's talk about gear for a second. So you have been playing Tom Anderson guitar for a while. So tell us a little bit more about your history with Tom.
So the Anderson thing came together in a funny way. And what I mean by funny is, and this is how a lot of things happen in my life, is by luck, by happenstance, not really anything too planned. So here's the long story, because I'm Chatty Cathy anyway. So I was, of course, like most people who were growing up and on YouTube and getting into fusion and like shred guitar, I was a fan of Guthrie Govan. And he played a Sur at the time. So of course I wanted a Sur Modern. I was like, oh, that's the guitar I want. So I went to a shop in Chicago called Making Music, and they also had some music men there, music mans.
Ernie Ball, music man, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just didn't know the plural was Music Man or Music Man. So they had some Music Mans there. And I wanted to try out the JP6 because I was playing the Indonesian models, so like they call them the Sterling by Music Man. So I was like, I want to try the, you know, the real thing and see how it is. But I was like, I want to try some Surds too. So I went to the shop in Chicago and I was looking at the headstocks. I was like, that's the Sur headstock, because I didn't know the history. And I was like, what's this? I picked up, it was a classic and it was an Anderson. It had a really fat neck on it. And I was like, I don't like this. So I put it down. Okay. That was my first experience with Tom Anderson. Sorry, Tom. I like thin necks. So blame Teddy, who ordered that spec. So it's it was just too thick for me. I was into super shred guitars at the time. So things happened, things evolved, and I wind a Music Man JP6 with a Koa top. It was my dream guitar. And I became friends with my good friend, Cody Davis, who has a drop top 7, an Anderson drop top 7 Koa. So it was the exact spec of a Music Man I wanted, but it was an Anderson. But I was like, that's way cooler than a Music Man because it doesn't have John Petrucci's name on it. Like it's its own thing, right? Like no offense to John. I just like, you know, playing my own thing. So I thought that's perfect, but they don't make a 24 fret at the time. So this is 2013. I was playing an Ibanez, RT, which is like the early Andy Timmons models. So it's kind of like a 24 flat, almost like a precursor to the AZ. Even.
Okay.
So it's like a 24 fret, had a pick guard. And I was really into that. Like it's classic, but it's modern thing. So I was like, well, the drop top will do. And I thought, well, I'll go 22 frets if that's what I have to do. So one of Cody's friends, through the Anderson circle, our friend Marcus, I didn't know this, but he worked with Anderson doing some software stuff. So we just became friends. And he became, you know, aware of my playing, and he's like, oh, like you're, you know, a good guitar player, all this stuff. So he introduced me to the Anderson guys, and, you know, I was like, I'm going to order a guitar. You know, I went to NAMM and I met them, and nothing artist wise. It was just like, oh, I love these guitars. You know, I'm going to order one. I'm going to place an order. And I was going to go direct just because I knew them, not anything artisty, nothing like that at all. So a couple months passes by from NAMM, and I'm becoming closer with, you know, friends in the Anderson circle. And they knew I wanted to order this guitar, but they knew I wanted a 24 fret. They knew I had the social media presence. So they said, let's tell them. So I spec'd out officially. I still have the spec sheet. I have the spec sheet that says drop top 24, which is now called that. But I have the first Angel. It's spec'd out. Like that's the first one that was ordered. And I'm so grateful. But the thing was, is that I went out there to spec it out and I was happy to just order it. But when they told me the price of it, it wasn't what I expected, you know? And I was like,
was it too high or too low?
Well, it's Koa. So, I mean, both, you know, but I was like, okay, that's still a lot, but I was like, that's not what I was expecting. I said, what's up? Is that not, you guys change? He goes, no, that's the artist thing. And I'm like, all right. And that's how it happened. So it just, they liked me. They liked my vibe and I liked theirs. And I was going to play their guitars anyways, because they're just the best guitars that I've ever played. So, yeah, it started from a very innocent place where it was just like, I just want this. Like I'm going to have one anyways. So I ended up with my Angel. So this thing arrived, on New Year's Eve of 2013. Ooh, and then nice. I got to help them debut it, the Angel model at the following NAMM. And it's one of the greatest honors of my life in a guitar playing career to, you know, be involved with such a spectacular company. But as things have gone on, you know, we would talk a lot, me and Roy. Roy is their art. He does everything there, but artist stuff. He does photos. And, you know, we would talk about everything from how to edit photos to philosophy and all this stuff. So we became just kind of close and just the rapport of non-guitar, just like, hey, we like talking. So, you know, we would consult about, you know, their Instagram posts or their websites or things like just fun, just having fun. Like, hey, what do you think of this? They would call me, hey, what do you think of these photos? I'm like, oh, I think those are great. He's like, okay, cool. Or just, it's being a part of the fun of it, right? Anderson's such a community in that way, but especially like that up close, they're just the greatest people. So a couple more years went by, you know, I've ordered a couple more guitars, got my own finish called Ginger Burst, you know, I have my own finish, it's red, it's red. And I love it, you know, and then I got the Guardian Angel, which is a guitar that has a pickguard on it, which I'm really proud of that. Not that Tom did it for me, but I bugged him enough to where he said, fine, I'll make it. And he did it. And I have the first one of those too, which is my blue. I have a Guardian. It's right now taken apart because I'm changing the pickguard, but it's a blue ocean turquoise 24-fret guitar with a pickguard that's based on my old Ibanez, because I wanted to have my Ibanez, but as an Anderson, because I thought that was a cool guitar, like just aesthetically. You know, and so I've kept getting guitars, and this is the most recent guitar I ordered. And I got this in 2018. And ever since I got this, my guitar playing changed completely, because I was not a Tele guy. I mean, I just talked about these 24-fret modern guitars, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And I got this thing expecting, oh, I want a Tele in the arsenal. Like, I want to have it for recording. Like, this, yeah. And I fell in love with it. It's just, I think this is my favorite guitar. Just yeah, I know. It's like, really? Like, I love this thing. And it's also different. It's orange like me. So I love that. and it's just, I don't know. It's so familiar, but it's different. You know, it has the Anderson stuff, like the cool neck joint where you can get all the way up here. So when I am playing Eruption, I can, you know, tune on my Tele, and that's fun. It's super lightweight. This thing's probably maybe 5 pounds. It's just spectacular.
And you don't miss the not having a tremolo on the guitar?
Well, I just pick up my tremolo guitars when I want it. You know, so it's taught me a lot, which is that, you know, I didn't expect that I like this, but it's my favorite guitar. Like, and I shouldn't say that. I didn't expect that I like it this much. That's what I mean to say. Like, I didn't expect this to become my thing. Like, I'd become a Tele guy. Like, I'm a Tele guy now. Like, all the photos I post are with my Tele, right? But here's the irony. It's like, I didn't use this on that new song. So it's in the video. But
I was about to ask the question. So what do we have on the Ocean?
Okay, so just being honest, when I treat guitars and recording all that stuff, I'm an artist with Tom Anderson. I love them, okay? But when you get in the studio, there's no, see with amps, anything. Rules are off, okay? So I use my Andersons for most of the track. But some of it is Music Man Albert Lee, which is fantastic. And I'll tell you why I use that as P90s. I don't have any P90s guitar or P90 guitars with me right now. I need Anderson P90s. Then I probably would have just used all Anderson, but I love P90s for rhythm guitar. So I used a Music Man Albert Lee a bit. Believe it or not, I use my Angels a lot for a lot of the rhythm guitars. And then for the lead guitar, it's all my Strat, which is my blue guitar. I can go get it if you'd like. It's my guitar case in the room. But it's a blue ocean turquoise Strat, or I call it the Icon Classic, but it's a good style guitar. Would you like me to go grab it?
Oh, yeah, sure. We need more guitar porn. Sure.
More is more, as Yngwie would say.
Exactly.
So what's cool about this guitar is that, again, somewhat uncharacteristic from the perspective of, you know, where my mental space had been for a lot of time, because I got this before I did my album Flux, and this became the lead guitar on almost the entire album. So funnily, I'm a Strat guy. Like, my first guitar is a Strat, or it was a PV Strat copy, and I have the body right here, actually. I'm getting it rebuilt. So I'm going to have this built up in the next couple of weeks. My first guitar, which is super fun. But I love the sound of this. And this has vintage style single coils in it. So it has all the hum. That's why if you listen to the song all the way, there's hiss, you know, there's hum, there's whatever. You know, I just tell people, listen to the vinyl version. You'll ignore it. You know, you'll hear the hiss. You know, it's like whatever. So I love this guitar because it's just so honest in terms of what you get, or what you put in is what you get. You know, it's not anything that's so flattering. Nothing is, you know, like if I'll just play a G chord, it's probably out of tune. I have two notes. But because of the nature of this being sort of blank canvas, but it's like so reactive and responsive, the single coils, they speak really well with the amps I've been using, and the just different sounds I've been using. I love this guitar. So this is the lead guitar in the whole entire song, except for the last guitar solo, which is my Koa Anderson. Can't really tell the difference in the tone, but I use that guitar just because it has a lot of a mid-range to it. So it almost sounded like putting a Tube Screamer on this, but without doing that, just using a different guitar. So all the leads, and honestly, this is mostly the leads that almost all the leads I do are on this guitar. It's very rare that I use, I'm trying to think, what else? I mean, the recordings I've done, I use this a lot. This is one of my favorite guitars for recording. Live, it's not as usable because of the hum. So if there's power, you know, problems, it's unmanageable. Mm-hmm. But I got to get another Anderson for that. You know, get another single coils that's silence. Yeah, that's the ones that are on that song. I use my I really like using the split sounds of humbuckers instead of single coils mm-hmm. for rhythm guitar because they don't take up as much bandwidth. So they sit already in the mix without you having to EQ out all the low end. And that's the one thing I don't know if a lot of people really think about with single coils as much is that how much low end they have. So for me, the low, I don't think as much of the high end and the spankiness. I think about the low end. So with singles. So with humbuckers, I don't always want that in the rhythm guitar because I'm going to be EQing it, getting it out of the way so that this can have a full body sound. So I try to get everything at the source tone if I can. Mm-hmm. The other thing about how I've been recording too, I'm sure you have any questions about amps and pedals and stuff, but I try to get everything recorded and have it sound like what it's supposed to sound like. I don't like having EQs and compressors on it at all. So my source tones are pretty much what you hear on the record. I mean, of course there's EQ and compression on that from the engineer, but it's pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. So my tracking sessions are just blank, like no EQ, no compression, just panning. And it's all in the playing and all in the settings. And that's also why it's taken so long is that I will literally take a day or three to just make one sound for one part of the song. And then I'll move on. Cause it's like, you know, painting and getting in the corners, going, oh, I need this brush stroke here and this here. So very much like an oil painting, like you have different layers and they all refract off each other with the light, or in this case, sound. Mm-hmm. So that's my approach a little bit with the tones. But would you like me to expand on kind of amps and recording in that way?
Was it using a good old tube amp amplifier or your Fractal stuff and so and such?
So the answer is yes to pretty much everything you can think of. So here's the thing. With this song, I said it took me so long to get it done, right? So there was also this where a couple times I was like, well, I'm going to just use a plugin right now to just get this tracked and then I'll reamp it later. But then I wound up going, I like the sound of it. So some of the rhythm guitars, like all the clean rhythm guitars are the AxeFX 3. I believe it's a couple firmwares ago. So not even the most up-to-date thing at this point. All the cleans were that. Some of the rhythm, all the rhythm guitars that are heavier, like the riff rhythms, are my Mesa Boogie 2C Plus, which is right there. 84 2C Plus with the old tubes. Sounds as good as you'd think. And the gear page is right sometimes, you know, the old stuff is better, but it's, you know, it really, I wish it wasn't, but it just is so good. So that's the rhythm guitars and on rhythms for the chorus. At the very end of the song, I have rhythm on one side that is Neural DSP Pliny, which is essentially a Friedman model. And then I have the BrainWorks BE, which is a Friedman model. So Friedman's on the sides for the last solo, but that's the rhythms. And then for the leads, I use mostly the Marshall Plexi. This is a 1968, the legit one. Nice. It's not mine, it's a buddy's. I'm borrowing it. And I've already blown it up once, so it's not, I feel so bad. But whatever. It's not, I turned it up loud. And the 2C Plus for the chorus. The 2C Plus, you know, the Mesa thing, I should say, has been so much of my sound for a long time because on my first album, Flux, I used a Mark V 25, which I've always tried to go for the Mark thing. And I love it. So there's part of it that's my sound, that's like there's no denying there's my voice is in there, but I also love plexis. So I mostly use these two amps for lead guitars on everything I do. And I love the AxeFX and it sounds pretty now. I mean, I mean, I'm playing the AxeFX right now just because that's the only thing I use. I only use this stuff on recording because it's too valuable to keep it on all the time and without it being like perfect power and all that stuff. So I just use it for tracking. And AxeFX stuff is great, but I love the finality of the sense. It is what it is. But I record both of those into load boxes. I use the two note stuff. Uh-huh. And in fact, on the last solo, I went with two notes units and I had the Marshall Plexi. I don't know if you can see it up there. It's a Germino amp, which is a modern custody reissue. Mm-hmm. So I had those in stereo, but I need to add, there's one piece missing that this is probably the most important piece of the puzzle.
Ah, the clone. All right.
Not a clone, the clone. And man, I wish the clones sounded the same too, but they don't. I don't know why. But this just sounds so magical. And it's like, it's literally like putting a magic elixir into the tone. It's just more better. It's like, this is already great, but it's more better. More betterer. So I just love this thing. And I use this all the time now. Going through so many batteries. It's my buddies. You know, I want to mention, I have some really gracious friends who let me use their stuff. And there's a quote one of my friends told me that I want to share with people. It's sometimes better to know the guy who owns the boat than to own the boat. Mm-hmm. Because you got to take care of all this stuff.
Yeah.
But if you just want to go on the boat for a day, you have a great day. So mm-hmm. I didn't have to buy this, you know, like, thank God. But I think I'm going to have to buy this from him because this is on everything now. So please buy my album. I need a clone. So what'd you use the record label advance for? I got a pedal. So I've been having so much fun, though. And that's the thing with this is that it sounds like, you know, I'm maybe overthinking or really anal about some of this stuff, but it's such a process to me. And I enjoy it. And I don't think it's for everyone. I think some people should work way faster. I know that I want to start working with people who are tracking me. So I'm not taking as much of that administrative, this is the good take, or I'm going to stop recording here. You know, I try to get everything that's perfect. So I've done like the solo on this song. I did 4 different solos, 200 takes each. Not exaggerating. It took me 3 weeks to get it done. And I'm happy with that because I became such a great guitar player versus where I was at because I practiced for 3 weeks. And you know, it's like, it's a lot of time playing guitar. So it's very healthy, I think, to be in the process if you're able to. And because, you know, I make my, I'm able to make my income from teaching, I have the flexibility to take as much time as I want with the music. So on the time thing, you know, I know you want to talk about that. It's been 5 years since I put out my first album, Flux. And I remember I told you at that interview that my new album be coming out that
I
summer.
Think so, yeah. I can pull up the video for footage for that, yes, to prove it, yes.
So I'm very glad that now I have sent you a song that is done and it is published to come out. But I think, you know, things take the time they have to take. And what I learned through this process is, you know, I've aged a little bit. You know, I went from being, I put out my first album and I was, 22. Yeah, I'm not good at arithmetic. I could figure out the cage system, but math, I don't know. So I grew up a lot in that time, and a lot of life things happened to me. I was living on my own. I had a girl and a dog. I had the whole thing going, and then I fell apart. Like life, because life has those things happen, and I had to move my entire life overnight and completely restart my life basically in 2018. So that was a big thing. And it took me a long time to get settled here and feel like settled. I mean, it's like it was a big life event for me. So that was personal. Something came up personal. I had to deal with that. I got in the way of my inspiration, you know, a little bit too. I wasn't really creative during that time. It's amazing how life has these journeys. And, you know, when I was younger, at least, I saw people do, you know, put on an album and disappear. And I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand why they... You know, why isn't this person continuing in this? Or why does this person only do one thing? Or why are they so sporadic with whatever? And I realized, you know, no one really knows what's going on with anyone's lives. But more so is that when you're young, you know, go back to this word volatile, life's wild. It's in your 20s. At least that's why it's so much change. So I'm really glad that I've had all this time to prepare and mature a bit, gain some wisdom, I hope, and allow it to be where when I start doing this more consistently, it's healthy and it's ongoing because it's there's a Rush song I was listening to it yesterday. It's marathon, and it's not about the sprint. You know, it really is not about that. And I've seen a lot of prodigies, you know, that burnt out, and I call it.
I saw them too.
I've already said so many things. So I have this thing I kind of joke about with my friends. But I call it the crucible. So crucible, you know, it's like it doesn't last in the fires. So I see, you know, a lot of young people. I go, okay, well. I'm really looking forward to seeing when they go through life. You know, like they might be 21 now and amazing, but I want to see them at 27, not because they're not great now, but because I know what I went through. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious how these people are going to get through things or evolve and change. And, you know, you take a guy like somebody, I think this is so cool, like a guitar player, Nick Johnston, right? So he's put out a vocal album with a band. I don't think anyone saw that coming. And that's really cool. So now I've had all this time to think about what I can do next and not painting myself into a corner as just the instrumental guitar player, which is an illusion anyways, because again, Nick, he put out a vocal album. But I've realized I can do whatever I want. I just have to keep making music and have fun doing it and do it with people I enjoy and share it with people who appreciate it, you know, and have talk with people who care about this kind of stuff like yourself. That's all it's about. And do it until I'm in the ground and that's it. But not to be famous or to have a signature guitar or to get a free amp or to get, I've seen it happen to people and they get burnt out and it's not worth it.
Yeah.
It's just, nothing's worth being that stressed. Mm-hmm. So that's why it took 5 years is that I needed to learn a lot of lessons and I'm still learning them too. I'm really excited for more. You know, it's I'm very young in this. And I mean, Steve Vai didn't put out Passion Warfare until he was 30. I almost delayed this until I was 32, just saying, because I thought about the concept of that, of like, that's a new stage. It's like, okay, now you're here. Now life is really more serious. I mean, maybe it's an illusion again, just based on how we see things, but it's amazing, man. I don't know. Growing up is a funny thing. I'm really grateful that I've been able to do it and come out with not that many scars from it. And now I'll be really stoked and productive and writing a bunch of music. So, I mean, I'm going to make a bunch of empty promises now, probably. But I mean, I have vocal albums that are an EP that's pretty much written. I have a bunch of stuff. I mean, I have the next music after this album already in the process.
The next album is going to be fully instrumental, or you don't know yet? Maybe some vocal stuff?
No.
We don't know. Okay.
Well, this entire album, so this new album, I should say, because I'm referring to this in my mind like it's already done. So this second album that is going to be released sometime this year as a full compilation, mm-hmm. as a physical release, that kind of thing. That is pretty much done, like in terms of sketched out the container.
Okay.
And I'm already writing after that. So mm-hmm. the next, there might be vocal stuff. I don't know.
Okay.
I want to do whatever feels good to do, because for a long time, last couple of years, I held myself to, I have to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And coronavirus happened. I'm like, you know, man, I'd rather just sing some songs around a fireplace with my friends at this point, rather than stressing about all this stuff. So it's just changed my viewpoint of the importance of songs and music and what they're here for. You know, like, they're here for us to tell stories with, and that's all I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled over yesterday. I was driving and I had a lyric idea. So I pulled over and I wrote it down, and I don't know if it'll matter. I don't know if it'll amount to anything, but it's about the process. So me even saying, oh, I'm going to have an EP out, or I'll have my album out this year, and it never came out, that's part of it. Like, because that happened, now I have to change my behavior over here. So I'd love to do a vocal album. I want to join a band. I want to do all this different stuff, but I don't really know what will happen, because I've been wrong about everything. So it's, you know, it's like, I've been wrong about everything, and that's part of it. I don't want to know what's up next, because I'm just dealing with today, mm-hmm. and I just want to make sure I get my work done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really a big thing for me. So again, I hope this is useful to people who are maybe in my same mindset of, you know, not really knowing what you're doing a little bit. I'm fully self-taught. I've never had a lesson on anything like musically. I probably need some career lessons and all of that, but I have a great mentor. You know, he's, I have great people in my life to, you know, help me figure this out as I'm growing to my 30s and 40s and hopefully beyond.
Excellent.
But ultimately it's what you do with those lessons learned. So I'm really excited to take this and make a lot more music, and it won't be 5 years. I'm going to be putting out songs, if anything. Albums don't do what they used to, you know.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
not, mm-hmm. it's not the same thing. Mm. So,
and apart from working on your very own project, what are the next project you would like to work on for the rest of the year? Anything top secret you could share with us?
Pretty boring, you know. I'm I've, you know, talking about, you know, removing things from my life, I've removed a lot of obligations from my life. So different things that I've been, you know, I was going to do, I've just turned it a lot. I turned everything down. I mostly want to teach a lot this year and finish up the album. I'm trying to do a lot of artistic stuff with this new music. So I mentioned, like, I couldn't make yesterday because I was so dead from a video shoot and doing music videos for this new stuff, which I've never done before. So this is my first time directing stuff, you know, being setting up a stage for, you know, or setting the stage for cameras and all this. And I'll share this. I mean, almost everything I did the other day, unusable. I have to reshoot it. And it's, I realized this morning. And it's like, I'm so upset, but I also know that this is how it goes. But like, I sent this to, have you seen Forrest Gump?
Yeah, sure.
The movie? So you know the scene where Captain Dan, he's not Lieutenant anymore. Captain Dan, he's on the boat and it's the storm. And he's like, woohoo! He's like, he's so mad, but he's just like, bring it on. That's how I feel right now internally. I'm like, I'm being hit by the storms, but I love it. And I'll tell you why. I said, this is what creativity is that you write a song, you go, I have to delete it, or it didn't turn out right. And
bring it on. Okay,
moving
on.
Bring it on, man. Come on. And I love it. But I've realized how much I love it and how much I just need to do that. You know, Steve Vai said something a long time ago in an interview, and it's something that I'm sure many of your listeners have heard too. It's one of his bigger interviews. And he said, he wants people to focus on what they're good at. You know, think about what they're good at and just work on that. And I'll be honest, when I heard that as a kid, you know, as a spunky, like, I want to be good at everything. I want to play every genre of music and I want to shred, you know, I thought that's bad advice. You know, I want to work on what I'm bad at. Right. And now that I'm older, I'm in, I wish I would listen to Steve. So I want to do what I'm good at. And I'm really good, like, you know, not to brag, but I'm good at one thing, which is creativity. I can just come up with random stuff. I've done stand-up comedy a little bit. I love creating stuff. I want to write a book one day. I want to make movies. I've always wanted to invent things. That's just my starting point. So I channel it into music, but that's who I am. So I just love making stuff. So when I wasn't, you know, playing guitar for a while last year, I was still being really creative. You know, in any way I can. I just, that's my favorite thing. So for me, creativity is all it is to me. It's like literally life. I don't know. Being bored and not doing things creative sounds worse than not having an option to do anything at all. Like, it just, I love the stress of activity of creativity. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's so fun. So the rest of the year will be massive projects that I probably shouldn't take on, of epic proportions, and I'll learn a lot and have to, you know, compromise or whatever, but it'll all be in developing and defeating perfectionism and becoming prolific. Because the one thing, you know, I talked about Alan Holdsworth earlier, and I want to mention this, is that, you know, Alan, to anyone who studied his life, and I don't know, I'm speaking on just what I've read and what I've heard, but things didn't go so easy for him in terms of his career. And he stopped putting out music prolifically after his life fell apart. He got divorced and I think he lost his home or something like that. And he did 16 Men of Tame and that was it. And for about a decade, he had all this music and just never came together. Now, for me, that's my greatest fear in life, is that I'm going to do all this stuff and then not have the process oiled. So I really, really, really want to just become prolific. I would love to just release music and every year, and like, or have us, I'd love to be like Prince, write a song a day. Like, I love the idea of that, right? I really care about that. I don't really care about how many people hear my music right now compared to that. Because if I don't have that, it's not sustainable. So I think what happens a lot is, you know, you have these one hit wonders, not necessarily guitar, people who have, they have all these ideas and they're really good at putting them in a container for a little bit. And then after that, they start losing it and they become less prolific. And I don't want that to happen. You know, I want to grow. Like, John Petrucci is a huge hero of mine. And what I love about John Petrucci is that he has this discipline of, he's never stopped doing what he's doing, ever. And, you know, I want to make sure that that break that I took is the only time that ever happens in my life. So I want to keep this going. So that's my project for the next year, next couple of decades, hopefully. Okay. Is just keep it going. Keep it going.
Excellent. So, Sean, it was really awesome to be able to have you on the show. Hopefully next time we'll meet, it will be face to face. Who knows, maybe absolutely, you will come to Paris and you will come here at my showroom and we'll do something, a guitar in hand, or hopefully there will be a Winter NAMM 2022, right? Let's hope for the best.
Yeah,
we have no clue at the moment. Sorry?
I probably won't go to any more NAMMs, but
okay,
I'll,
no more
NAMMs
for you. Okay.
No, man, you know, every time I played there, I got shut down by the sound police. For real.
You so played too loud.
Like, it's like, what's the point of going? Like, if I want to see my friends, I'll just go get a beer with them. Like, I don't want to be like, what did you say? I can't hear you. We're right by the drums. Let's go over here. You know, it's.
So maybe what we should do is that I will go to Tom Anderson shop and cool. I asked Tom last year to do it, but it was not possible. He was not at the working building shop at the moment, but we'll do something at Tom Anderson workshop, right? Okay?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me know. I mean, hey, I love to travel and I want to, especially because this last year I realized, let me rephrase it like this. So I'm single. I have no animals to take care of any kind. I'm a free man. I can do anything I want at any given time, as long as it doesn't go against my schedule, right? I have not traveled the world. So I want to travel now. So like, part of the thing I want to do over the next couple of years is, you know, have to take some more vacations for myself in that kind of way. But if it's guitar related or music related, I'm there. So let's arrange something. I'd love to do that and come to France. France is one of the, on all of my stats for my listening of music, it's probably, besides the United States, the most listened to place of my stuff. So if I come, hopefully it'll be a couple people, you know, throwing some throwing out tomatoes at me.
Yeah, you definitely have some big fan. I have one subscriber of mine. His name is Michael Meloff. Hello, Michael.
Yeah.
And he told me, oh, you have to tell Sean I love him and I'm waiting for the next album and so on. So, Michael, this one's for you.
What up, Michael? Yeah, he hit me up on Facebook yesterday and said, he's like, yeah, Piers Morgan is. I was like, what a small world. Because he's always commenting on my Facebook stuff. Really nice guy.
Yeah. So any other project you would like to mention before we take off?
So in addition to all the music things I have going on, I take education very seriously. Self-education, things I'm an eternal student of the world. I love learning about everything. But I've really realized the value of teaching. And I think that it is very important if you have something to say it. You know, that's if I can help people, it means a lot to me. So what I'm starting to do is, you know, I've been teaching one-on-one for, you know, like I mentioned, since 2012, but because of just the nature of the accessibility of that, from everything from the price to the time commitment, I've realized it's not necessarily accomplishing what I want to feel. Not that it's, I'm not, I love teaching, but I want to affect more people more and more. I need to get better at content making. I have another thing for that down the road, but what I'm going to be doing is group guitar lessons. So maybe 20, 30 people, you know, for really cheap, you know, something like no brainer price. I've asked a bunch of people, hey, what's a no brainer to where you go? You'd be a fool to miss it. You know, so I want it to be accessible for literally anyone and have fun and it'd be educational, kind of like, you know, Bob Ross, The Joy of Painting. Like I want to have fun with people. I want them to be very inspired. And I think being in a group setting and having everyone have that group interaction or seeing what other people might ask and having the relatability to other guitar players, it might help foster some community. It might help I think it can be helpful. So I'm going to be offering that soon. I don't necessarily have a catchy name for it yet. The Shred Dojo, I think, is taken. And Kick Ash Licks is a little too provocative. You know, I need to come up with a good pun for my name. But yeah, that's something I'm going to be doing really shortly. I've been waiting actually to do this until I put new music out because I felt kind of weird offering group lessons and saying, hey guys, come sign up for my lesson. And they're like, well, yeah, but what are you doing there? So I felt like a little strange. So I'm going to be coupling it with this. So I'll be announcing probably sometime in June, the first of these, but I haven't really thought about so much, but they're going to be somewhat themed, like, oh, technique or, you know, my approach to visualization on the fretboard or things like that. But I want it to be one of those things where it's open-ended and maybe offering more than anyone's ever given in the way, like, I don't mind going for 3 hours and it'd be question and answer and give people honest answers, because not that people are dishonest, but I just have noticed that there's so much to share that I want to share with people. And that when I share it, you know, they seem to be receptive. So anyone who's down for that, I want to make this a thing. I want people who are receptive to be there, and I want to give what I have. Cause I think that, you know, I think what I have to say is useful. And I just really want to help the world. Because there's a lot of us, there's a lot of people, and I want to be useful. I want to have utility in what I do. So yeah, that's a big project, and how I see it is group lessons, and eventually maybe have I kind of would call it a special because I'm thinking like comedy specials, but like I want to have like an hour long production. This is a years out, but I want my eventual goal is I want an hour long production of like the intro guitar DVD. Like the for beginners, and then it'd be free so everyone can watch it. But setting everyone up, you know, like from starting out, like the best way to play. And something, you know, on that note, I know I'm chatting a lot, but in the next couple of years, the internet's going to change in a way that none of us can even understand. There are all these satellites going up right now, Starlink, as I'm sure people are aware, and there are about to be 2 billion people in the continent of Africa who gain access to the internet. Let's say it again, there's about to be 2 billion people who gain access to the internet. And not just that, but the entire economy of the globe will change as a result of this. So the music economy is going to change. Something I found out recently that blew my mind is Nigeria has 200 million people in it. Now, as an American, I did not know this. I just thought, oh, America is like one of the biggest countries, 330 million. There's a country that I've never talked to anyone from that has 200 million people in it. But they don't have much access to music right now versus us, internet stuff. This is going to change. I mean, it's coming. It's literally, you could put it on a calendar pretty much with all this different decentralization going on and satellites going up for internet and technology getting cheaper. So I want to really put my efforts to a generational concept of teaching. You know, I really care about this stuff. So I'd love to impact people's lives in the way of being their first guitar teacher, and they could learn, you know, and have fun and hopefully take what I learned. And they remember that, because share this. There's a DVD that I was given when I was a kid, when I first started playing guitar. My music theory, I took a music theory class. It was not really music theory. It was like basically all the kids who didn't want to do choir or band got lumped into that. It was music history. And she knew I was interested, this teacher knew I was interested in playing guitar. So she gave me this DVD. I think it was called Rock House Method. So I just thought of this a couple months ago, because of all this different stuff going on in the world. And I thought about, like DVDs and, you know, how could you have some start out right? And I was like, I wonder what that was about. So I looked it up, and it turns out that that was like a production that these guys did out of their house. Like it was like a DIY kind of thing. It was a DVD they made. And that's the first DVD I learned from. And those guys don't even know, because I want to reach out to them hopefully one day. I mean, they'll probably be like, whatever. But like, I think it's so cool that that impacted my life and they don't even know it. So I think about how I could do that for someone else, how I might be able to be that for someone else. And that would be so special. So I really want to get into more beginner stuff, more broad teaching that's useful for everyone, not just here's how to play that lick from my song with economy picking, you know, here. You know, I really want to be useful to the world. And I think there's a window of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. We'll see. I anyone listening, please do this too. Like we need more teachers. Like really, mm-hmm. There's not enough of us.
And so, the best way to have the latest information, I suppose, is to have to go to your website to have the latest news about that project and the rest. Yeah.
Yeah, my website, my social media that I neglect. but yeah, it's pretty good. I'd say my website. I'm getting things together, guys. I'm getting my act together, and I'll hopefully be updating things. But yeah, my website, SeanAshMusic.com. And I can be found at Sean Ash Music on pretty much all social medias except TikTok. And I'm on there too, but I don't post. It's Sean Ash Music. So it's pretty much that. And honestly, if you type in my name and you don't come across me, just look for the ginger guy. Like look for this guy. I'm not going to cut my hair. So.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, Sean. Great.
All right, thank you, Bear. I'm really looking forward to seeing where things go in the world. You know, I still think we have a long time before this is done. Yeah. I think we're not going to be, I don't think 2023 even, that's my opinion. So we'll see where things go. Mm-hmm. But I think if there's anyone watching, you know, just make music. It's all that matters. It's all you got. Like Eddie Van Halen, just play, man. Just keep playing.
Yeah. Excellent conclusion. Again, thank you very much for your time, Sean. See you.
You bet, man. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you letting me go on a lot of tangents.
I love it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For the price of a magazine, subscribe to The Guitar Channel to access the full videos.